De manier waarop we als samenleving de ruimte bieden aan de vrouwelijke cyclus laat nogal te wensen over. Want waarom ligt er bijvoorbeeld op elk toilet wel wc-papier en zeep, maar geen maandverband? En hebben vrouwen niet gewoon recht op verlof als ze menstrueren? We krijgen een mini-college over menstruele gezondheid. In het Engels mag ik een warm welkom voor Maria Carmen Punzi.
Allereerst wil ik jullie bedanken voor jullie geduld, omdat ik ga vanavond mijn mini-college in het Engels. Helaas kan ik niet volledig in het Nederlands, maar hopelijk ga ik volgende keer wel in het Nederlands doen. So with a very strong Italian accent, but I try my best. I've been in this country a long time. I love it. I love the language, but it's a long, long journey. So tonight I have the pleasure to bring to the table all the most controversial topics that I think have ever touched the ground of Studio Erasmus. So menstrual health, menstruation, why we should talk about it at work, and why I think it will actually benefit men quite a lot. So I have put on the slide the pictures of two main things that happen in the workplace and that we're still dealing with. One is the glass ceiling, a term that maybe many of you are familiar with. It's the barrier that prevents many women to advance in the workplace. So we know now we have a lot of different women in the workplace. The statistics say the number is going up. Of course, underrepresented groups, especially women of color, remain in the sideline, unfortunately. But women are in the workplace, so they are working, they are advancing. But the problem is that we know already from data, and particularly even the pre-pandemic, that women just in general are expected to spend 25% more time in poor health than men. So they live longer, but they live considerably less healthy lives. And we can go very in-depth about why, but I think this points to the reason why we should talk about health at work. Because the way in which we show up at work intersects with our health, intersects with our bodies, and also our hormones. So, what do I want to talk about to you today? I think when we talk about discrimination in the workplace and when we talk about the glass ceiling, we shouldn't forget that we are bringing our full selves to work, our bodies, our hormones, and it's a difficult topic to talk about, but hopefully tonight I can offer you a bit of a provocative statement, which is once we start talking about menstrual health at work, we can achieve better well-being, but also kind of smash through the glass ceiling and hopefully also support people that don't menstruate, that don't have a cycle. Because I think that the structures that we live in, especially in the workplace, the culture sometimes that we have to deal with are unhealthy, both if you have a menstrual cycle and if you don't. So to answer the question, well, can it really be so disruptive to support menstrual health in the workplace? I think some of you have to be introduced to what it means to have a menstrual cycle in the workplace. So I cannot assume your gender from here, but I am assuming that many of you have experienced a menstrual cycle in the workplace, and if you haven't, you have a partner, a sister, a mother, or a colleague who has. So let me give you a few examples, a few episodes of things that can happen. So you get your period unexpectedly while at a meeting, and there's no menstrual products in the toilet, so you just have to wrap like a sort of sweater around your back and hope that you're not going to bleed through your pants. Or there's a whole meeting that goes on for 3 hours and your back hurts and you would like to stretch, but of course you don't want to ask to have a break because you don't want to look weak or vulnerable or less productive. And also, the third thing that can happen, and unfortunately I have seen this, I have experienced it, and I think many of us can say the same, there's also jokes and stereotypical comments about, well, are you on your period? Why are you so cranky? Or are you PMSing? And all nice things like that. Well, let me tell you one thing. Menstruation in itself is not the problem. Studies have shown repeatedly that whatever productivity is lost at menstruation is actually gained at ovulation. And what that means is that this is basically a zero-sum game. That we're not less productive because we are menstruating, we are not less productive because we have a hormonal body. By the way, men and cis-het men have also a hormonal body. It's just a daily body, and it's not a monthly one, but they experience emotion, they experience hormones, and I think any of you who knows a man or is a man would agree with me, and with science, by the way. So it's important to point out that we cannot talk about hormones without being a little bit careful, a little bit vorsichtig, with the effects that might have on gender equality advancement. So the reason why I say menstruation is not the problem, the way we are socialized and the way we're being told that we are weaker if we're menstruating is. Because, of course, anyone with a menstrual cycle can do exactly the same kind of work that someone who doesn't have a menstrual cycle can do. But if we are portrayed as weaker for having one, and if we're being told that we cannot take breaks, if we're being told that we should function the same way every single day, of course we're not going to fit with that model. This is why it's quite a challenge, I have to say, to be a researcher in this topic. I also work in a business school, so you can imagine the kind of environment that I have around me. But I like to point out to this as one of the many barriers that women face in the workplace. And this is not the only one. I mean, of course, we know that women don't want to be seen as unemployable, but often they're asked about whether they have intention to conceive, for example, at interviews, something that should not be allowed by law, but is still asked. So I think it's important to make the point here that this is not just a women's problem. I'm told all the time, oh, well, I mean, this is, of course, about women, and it is, but this is also about society, because we know from the latest research, really, that if we were able to close that health gap that comes from these missing women's health problems, we would actually benefit overall as a society. And the economy would also really benefit from it. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of saying everything has an economic value, because I think that we should not be reduced to a dollar or a euro amount. But I think in this case, it really helps to know that indeed, and I think the NOS would agree with me, that if there is not enough attention to the topics around women's health, there is just like an economic and societal loss. So what do we do? Some of you may have seen on the news, this has made international news in the last months, that Spain was the first European country to approve the menstruative loaf, so that's menstrual leave, that basically guarantees 3 days of paid leave to women that have painful, disruptive periods. Now, very briefly, I would like to explain to you why I think this is not the golden answer. And just still staying positive that there are answers. So hopefully you walk away from this and not too discouraged that we can do something about menstrual health in the workplace. So I really like this radio interview, and I have listened to it and understood it in Dutch, so that was a personal highlight for me. But about, well, what can actually workers do, employers do, when it comes to supporting menstrual health in the workplace? And is the menstrual leave actually the key answer to this? And here there was a conversation between someone from a labor union and a gynecologist. And you can see the, or listen to the replay on the MPOA. And there was a really balanced discussion around, well, is this even possible? Is this actually supportive for women in the workplace? Well, there's three main reasons why it might be a problem. In Spain, for example, you have to bring a doctor's note. And if anyone of you has ever been to a GP talking about menstrual pain, you know that this is not exactly the easiest thing to convince a doctor about. Because there is this idea that women are hysterical, or women are not, don't have a very high tolerance of pain, and therefore, neem vel een pilletje en ga door. So take a painkiller and you proceed with life. Don't make such a big fuss about it. The second problem is that we know from other countries where menstrual leave is actually in place, for example, South Korea, that women don't take menstrual leave. So don't take these days, even if their menstruation is actually disrupting their workplace and their work life, because they are afraid that their career will be damaged by it. And I think that's a fair fear to have, to be honest, because if we don't really talk to managers and to leaderships about what it means to have a menstrual cycle, and we just tell them, well, you have to guarantee a couple of days per month to women that have menstrual complaints, well, that doesn't sound very attractive to an employer. And the third thing, I think, is it normalizes menstrual pain to a level where Women might think that, okay, yeah, I can just take off and I can stay home. But actually, menstrual pain that disrupts your working life should be taken a look seriously by a doctor and should not just be cured at home with a painkiller. So actually, we need to change the structure of the medical system to really take care of such people. And we just don't have to relegate women at home after they are taking a leave. So this is what I see, and it's, of course, a very long story, but it's a bit problematic when it comes to menstrual leave. But I think that there's also some potential. If we talk about really what does it mean to acknowledge that the body has limitations and the body has characteristics in the workplace. And that's where the men come in. I hope all of you feel seen and welcomed in the talk, because I love talking about menstruation with men. I think they are a great audience. Usually they are very curious, and there's something for them to learn. I hope you would agree. I was looking at the men in the first row because they look quite interested. I think that it's becoming increasingly clear that for everyone, the workplace that we are spending so much of our time in is not helpful, is not healthy, is not supportive. I have personally heard people around me struggling with mental health, with physical health, and when I speak about people in this case, I mean men. And I think the stereotypes that harm women are also harming men, actually, in this case. Because men are told that, yeah, they should just perform, they should just know the answer, they should just not ask, they should just not say no, because they wanna. We want leaders, and then we want particularly male leaders who know what they want and who know where they're going and don't stop and are not weak and are not vulnerable. And I mean, I think it's important then to acknowledge that the workplace that we build are not even just for men. Sometimes I hear this sentence like, oh yeah, the workplace is not made for women. But the truth is the workplace is not made for anyone. It's just made for able-bodied, very strong, very healthy, positive, productive, and wealthy white men. But I mean, this is such a small, small group. And I would say maybe many of you in the group would not even fit there. So I think that it's important to acknowledge that when we talk about menstrual health at work, what we want us to think about is really how do we support people's well-being in the workplace, whether they have a menstrual cycle or not. The menstrual cycle is a nice excuse. It's sort of a Trojan horse to start talking about actually different challenges. So as a concluding thought, in a way, I want to kind of be a bit provocative and say this should not just be about biology. This is not just about biology. This is a combination of biology and socialization. So women are being asked in the workplace to perform and act in ways that don't make sense with their way their brain and their body work. But that's not just it. So it's not like we have to start syncing now our agenda to the menstrual cycle. I always say I'm against the dictatorship of the menstrual cycle. Let's not go there. It's not helpful. What is helpful is acknowledging that if your body and your brain work a certain way, and then you're also being told that you're less smart and that you're less confident and that you have imposter syndrome, and then, of course, also you don't really fit with the model of the middle manager, well, that's going to be a huge barrier. But if we start talking about how when we go to work, we bring our full selves with our stories of maybe infertility, chronic pain, physical injury, having to care for the elderly. And this really is valid as much for men as it is for women and non-binary people and trans people. Well, I think that's the key to really bring menstrual health from a women's issue to a societal issue. So I hope you will agree that we can reframe menstrual health of menstruelle gezondheid from a individual issue to a societal issue and something that can actually propel us forward and become and help us become more inclusive. So I always say there's no gender equality without menstrual health, but that goes as much for women as for men. So thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the evening.